The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment, using proven evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options. You'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. And normally I would ask Mark Sigmund for some news, but Mark is not feeling well. He's under the weather. Linda's with us today filling in as usual. I have a couple quick stories I want to run by in recovery news this week. First of all, unfortunately, Ann Hesch has passed away. The movie star, television star has died. And she died as a result of a car crash. And they're not exactly sure if the substances in her body, which were cocaine and fentanyl, were as a result of her use or when she was taken to the hospital, was the fentanyl given to her at that point for pain. So it's a sad story, no matter what was in her body. It's another story of drugs and speeding and cars and all that kind of stuff. I have another story. Linda?
There's a thing going around. For about 3 years, we've been trying to sell the idea of everybody testing their drugs for fentanyl. And I had a client pass away from some ecstasy that she thought didn't have anything in it. And this might have been the same case. She might have bought some cocaine thinking she was going to have a good, happy afternoon. And there was fentanyl in it, and she died, and look what happened. I mean, and the trolls online, the people, there's no forgiveness.
Yeah.
There's no forgiveness. Oh, she's horrible. She should be under the jail. I hope she's punished. All the comments on Facebook have been terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible, the responses. Okay, for our listeners and viewers, if you're using drugs, let me tell you the countries you shouldn't be going to and what will happen to you if you get caught. In China, if you're caught with drugs, you could be forced to attend drug rehab. That's fine. In a facility run by the government, execution is the penalty for some crimes. Vietnam. In Vietnam, drug crimes are taken very seriously. If you're arrested with more than 1.3 pounds of heroin, Linda, you would be automatically executed. No ifs, ands, or buts. Iran. Iran is not known to be tolerant of criminal offenses in general, and drug offenses no different. The use of opium in particular is a problem in Iran, you're subject to also execution. Saudi Arabia. You getting the idea where these countries are?
Mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia. The sales of drugs in Saudi Arabia almost always result in the death penalty. Saudi Arabia and judicial authorities are not inclined to make exceptions. Alcohol use is illegal in Saudi Arabia, and possession or use of alcohol or drugs can be punished by public flogging, fines, lengthy imprisonment, or death penalty.
Yep.
You get the drift. Costa Rica, a little closer to home.
Yeah, a lot of people go there.
As in other South American countries, possession of drugs in Costa Rica can land you in jail for many, many decades. Last one, Colombia. If you get caught with drugs in Colombia, you will spend a long time in a very unpleasant prison. Police make several arrests a day at airports in Colombia, catching many foreign nationals. I watched that television show.
I watched that show too.
Yeah, what's it called again?
Smuggling something. I forget. It's on Nat Geo.
Something really crazy. So our listeners and viewers, Do not go to any of these countries if you're using drugs.
And we know what happens in Russia. You know, the poor basketball girl.
Yeah, that's a tragedy
also.
She's
stuck there for 9 years now.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about women in recovery. Linda's here. Rachel's here. We're going to get a lot of really good information when we get back. So stay tuned.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campus in Devon, PA and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Hey everybody, this is former Philadelphia Flyer Chris Terrien, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We're also heard on these great stations across America. KDWN Las Vegas, Nevada, WHFS Tampa, Florida, and WGAC Augusta, Georgia, and soon we'll be announcing some more stations. By the way, we have a phone upgrade, so we have a new phone number. 1-888-729-9941. That is 1-888-728-9941. Okay, we are back. Hey, welcome, ladies, to the show. Linda, you're a pro here. Thanks for coming in. Rachel, thank you so much. We're going to learn a little bit about you. Today's subject is an important one. It's women in recovery. And women in addiction also before they get into recovery. And what are the differences between men and women in addiction and getting into recovery? So, Linda, we know all about you. Rachel, give us a little background about yourself.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me today. I'm from Wisconsin originally, so most of my drinking took place in Wisconsin. So coming out here, it was a little bit different. But I am 27. I've been sober for 7 years, and I mostly I've been mostly sober in the Philadelphia area.
Okay. All right. And Linda, I think we know your story, unless you want to give a little background. But I'd like to know from both of you, what differences, because I have some of my own opinions on the difference between men and women. I'm not talking about physically. I'm talking about in drugs and addiction. What are your thoughts? Was it difficult to get into treatment? Was there more embarrassment? Was there more shame? Is it any better in recovery? Linda, what was it like for you?
When I first came in, I got really lucky. I went to a meeting and I met some people and I stayed with them the whole time.
Yes.
So it was good for me. I didn't have to go into treatment. But 11 years ago, when I did have to go into treatment at 50-something years old, it was very difficult. It was really hard. I went to a lovely place that's not far from here. And I really, really learned a lot. I was there for 35 days. And coming back, I saved Gary's group for the last one. I went back to everywhere I used to go for 7 days, and I went back to their meeting, and I said, guess what? I have 30 days. Yeah. And they were shocked.
But was it hard?
It was hard.
I guess my recollection, when I was in rehab a long time ago, I remember there was a woman in there. I thought she was in her 90s. She was probably younger than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew my mother. Oh. And when she found out my mother was coming to visit me, she totally fell apart. She was so embarrassed, mm-hmm. so much shame. And I don't really see that from guys, the shame and the embarrassment. It's more acceptable for guys to become addicts than women.
Yeah, women are really looked down upon as drunks, drug addicts. And coming in the program, now you have a lot of women's meetings now. A lot of women are not comfortable in the co-ed meetings anymore. I'm going to a women's meeting, and there's like 40 people there every week.
Yeah.
So I really, and the young girls tell me they feel more comfortable with women, especially the young girls that have kids. The meeting I go to has a little daycare thing going on.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, but shame and guilt are the biggest thing for women. And if they can't overcome that shame and guilt, sometimes they relapse.
I've been reading up on it, a lot of the issues for women that are different from men are that cause addiction and stuff like that, partners, intimacy with partners, family abuse. Women have a higher rate of depression, problems with self-esteem, whether, what's the term when you see yourself in the mirror, you don't really see what you're looking at, something dysmorphia.
Body dysmorphia.
Yeah. So there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of pressure on women besides this whole thing with addiction, to live up to. But I would just imagine if you're a woman and you're trying, and you have a problem, it must be difficult to talk to a lot of people, your girlfriends in particular, who don't have this issue, because the response that you would get most likely is not helpful.
Right. Yeah, you can say something.
Yeah. No, I think, there's a big stigma, especially being a woman, with the emotions. You touched on the emotional aspect. And especially being sober and being young and sober as well, I feel like I've heard a whole range of comments from you're just a wine drunk, or especially with women who like to drink wine or anything in particular. I haven't heard a man be referred to as a wine drunk or just someone who drinks a little too much wine because the kids are whatever.
Right.
So it does get a little frustrating in that aspect with the separation. And I do think you touch on a great point with the emotions. I think that women sometimes, at least in my experience, tend to be stigmatized a little bit more because of the emotions. You just had a really bad night. Oh, you're just a little bit depressed. You're just a little bit this. Maybe if you didn't, it almost minimizes the addiction. It minimizes the drinking as if it's solely the emotion or solely something else, when it really can be very intertwined. And just like Linda was saying, if you don't overcome some of those baseline issues, it really can spiral out of control.
Absolutely.
Men are twice as likely to become addicts than women.
Mm-hmm.
But men seem to be able to seek treatment faster for some reason than women. And maybe it's because their own initiatives, pushing for it. And women don't want to open up that can of worms. When people say, where is she? Oh, she's in a rehab. Oh, she's a drunk. She's a whore. All this kind of crap.
I think it's harder for women to be out of the house for 30 days. I just think, we're talking about the gals in my meeting. There's a lot of single gals with children. They got sober in rehab. They're now separated from their husbands. They're either back with their mom or living on their own. It's really hard. A lot of these people have small children.
That's a great point. You know that?
They can't leave. Where are they going to? Who's going to take care of the kids?
Right.
The dad still goes to work.
Right.
If they don't have a mom who lives nearby, they're stuck.
And, it's very easy for somebody to say to a woman, look, what's the most important thing? It's getting sober. You got little kids in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, there has to be some kind of balance. It's not that easy for women. Men, it's easier. And, there have been studies that say, women who try the same drugs as men are more likely to become addicted faster than the male peer.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. They get, and I don't know what it is in the genes or the cells. It goes right to our cells. We're not digesting it, and it's just acting faster, different metabolism. I don't know why. Might be hormones.
Yeah. So do you guys hear from your friends who are in recovery? Do you hear about these stories? I mean, look, even when you go to a meeting and it's a male and female meeting, women have to sort of be careful.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of vultures out there.
There are.
And that makes it more difficult. You guys have it way more difficult than men.
Well, I think it can be uncomfortable, especially in that aspect of women's meetings and men's meetings, because especially for a newcomer, when you're coming in, there's that state of vulnerability. And I feel like if a man is coming in seeking that vulnerability with another man, I don't have that direct experience, but I don't feel like they're directly looking to try to get in their pants or try to seek a relationship or something like that. And I feel oftentimes, with my own stories and several women that I know coming in, a lot of the big concern is, that idea that someone with more time than you, someone who has more experience, specifically a man or a vulture or whoever, will come in and prey on that emotional vulnerability sure. when you first come in.
Sure. You know, hey, if you're just joining us now, I'm speaking with Linda and Rachel. We're talking about women in recovery. I don't think we've done a show like this, strictly the issues that women have in addiction and recovery. And I just want to mention our new phone number is 1-888-728-9941. Give us a call. You know, get involved with this conversation because, you know, half the population is female. So there have to be some females out there that can relate to this issue. I have a question. I'm going to ask both of you. Okay. And I was thinking about this. When you were in your addiction, do you think it was easier for you guys to get drugs than it was for men? And I'll tell you why. Here's what my thoughts are. It was easy for guys to give you drugs. Mm-hmm. Women weren't really giving guys drugs.
No.
And I can only imagine, you know, going to the pharmacy and, you know, I don't want this to sound sexist, you know, batting your eyelashes a little bit and saying, I need to get this prescription filled, even though the pharmacist might think it's phony. Mm-hmm. I think that you guys had an advantage. What do you think about that? Or is that just my twisted thinking?
Well, now the drugstores report everybody. I had a client who I was helping her through everything, and she was waiting for her second hearing. And the second hearing, she went away 4 years for the fake prescription.
So 4 years?
4 years.
That's
a lot.
And
she had children. She had
children.
Yeah. And she was in treatment. I mean, she was getting her treatment. She was coming every day.
4 years for a bad prescription?
4 years for a fake prescription.
I'd still be in.
Yeah.
You know that?
Exactly, right? And it was easier because I remember the other night I was talking to my girlfriend that I grew up with, and we used to go out a lot together. And one night we met two guys somewhere on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And you're there for a few minutes. And the guy over, I was 20, 21. And you want some Coke? And they'd give you the Coke to go to the bathroom, and you'd come back. And I didn't have any worries about getting anything. We have a caller.
Yeah, well, actually, we have a caller. Carlos is on the line. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Gary, my man.
My man, pots and pans. How are you?
Good, man. Good. I haven't talked in a while. I have a question. I was just watching. I was, like, really intrigued when the one gal sitting next to you said something about child care while a meeting is going on. I was like, whoa, what is that?
Oh, okay. So in the area where I go to meetings, there are a lot of single moms. And a bunch of the meetings I go to are in a church where there's a little daycare room anyway that they use during the day. So people take turns going in that room and watching the kids. Or somebody's assigned to it for the month and they'll do it. And people know which meetings have babysitters and which meetings they're allowed to bring their children. The children don't participate in the meeting.
And what do they do? Do they like bring somebody from the outside to come in for the month, or
somebody from the meeting usually volunteers. A few weeks ago, brought two kids, and her friends took turns watching them, and it was fine.
Like, hey, Carlos, it's 2022, man.
Right?
But you know, I get what he's saying. It can be disruptive too.
Right. But these meetings have a separate room.
I believe it's a huge void that needs to be filled. I mean, I'm like, to find a meeting. What's the most common excuse for parents?
I can't go.
Who's going to watch the kids?
Yeah.
Right. Who's going to watch my kids? I can't afford a babysitter every night to go out.
Yeah.
And, you know, so these ones that have, there are quite a few that have daycare and babysitting.
Yeah. I don't know any in the Monmouth Ocean County area in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Well, we're talking Delaware County, Montgomery County over here.
Check that out.
Yeah, check it out. You know, Carlos, we haven't heard from you in a year or so. It's good to hear your voice, man.
No, it hasn't been that long.
Yeah, it has. I got it written down. I got it written down.
Yeah. All right. I'll give you a call. I'll give you a chat. Or I'll give you a shot during the week.
That sounds beautiful. Be well. Thanks for the call.
All right, pal.
All right, man.
Bye-bye.
Good.
Bye.
Hey, if you want to listen or watch us do the show live, just go to Facebook and to our Facebook page, Clean and Sober Radio, at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And like these great folks who we're doing right now, Debbie Reynolds, Alan Trobman, Hans Darvish. Manner of Hope is watching. Soka Dean, I hope I pronounce that right. Ed McCash, Nikki Cosino. Hey, Nikki, happy Friday to you. She's in New Orleans.
Oh.
Did I say that right? New Orleans. Mark Willing. Hey, guys.
Hey, Mark.
Mark's around. Mike Siberia is watching. Jackie Mullica, awesome topic. Yeah, it is a good topic. And it needs to be just not one show, because it is, you know, if you're not a woman, you really can't understand the trials and tribulations that you guys go through,
It's interesting. I had been around for a long, long time, and I went to a home group where I knew everybody. The same people were there every Friday night, okay?
Yeah.
When a stranger would walk in, it would usually be someone new. Sometimes it was a man, sometimes it was a woman. And a man came in one time, and he stared at me the whole meeting. He was sitting here, and I was in the living room part. And he's staring and staring and staring. And, like, everybody else knows me. They know I'm married, you know. He comes up to me at the break, and he gets right in my face and says, "Has your husband ever taken you to Paris?"
Oh, boy.
And I look at him like, "What? Huh?" And he's like, "You deserve to go to Paris." Like, out of the clear blue sky. Like, you never know what people are going to say to you.
You guys, yeah. I'm talking about women in general. There's so many external ridiculousnesses, if that's a word, that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
I notice in a meeting, I'm sitting there, if a woman walks in, everybody turns their head.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the strangest thing. Sometimes I, especially coming into a meeting, most of the time when I go in, I want to be anonymous. I want to just sit in the seat. I want to get the message. I want what everyone else wants there. And sometimes if I'm wearing a little too much makeup, sometimes if I'm dressed a little bit nicer, sometimes if I'm dressed, you know, however I'm dressed, I feel like it's always up for scrutiny, whether in someone's head or a direct comment's going to be made. And that takes me away from the message that I'm trying to hear when I come in, which is also why I love women's meetings. Yeah. I feel like every women's meeting I've been in, yeah, as soon as I come in, we're all there. Like, there's just this feeling of safety. Like, we're there for the same thing. We're going to get the message, and we're there to support each other. We don't feel it just doesn't feel the same as a co-ed meeting. Co-ed meetings are still fun. I've never personally been to a men's meeting, but it's just, it feels safe, much safer.
Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, I totally get it. You know, I totally get it. Because I'm a very aware person. That's why I get this stuff. And, you know, one way I feel, you know, it takes away why you're in a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It takes away the distractions.
It does. Mm-hmm. It really does. And women, you know, women can hide it better. So that statistic that men are more, women are in the kitchen drinking. They're cooking. They're doing things. And you don't really notice. You're out of the house all day. They're watching the dogs and the children. And when you get home, they might have just taken a shower to freshen up and everything, and they use mouthwash, and you don't know anything, and that's how they act. And they only have to act nice for 3 hours till you go to bed.
Right.
So it's like they can hide it way better, way easier.
Well, especially if women are covering – a lot of women that I know covering most of the house chores.
No, you go.
Okay.
No, go.
Most of the time when women are covering a lot of the house chores or cleaning a lot, yep. You know, if we're drinking excessively, it's very easy to cover our own tracks. If we're the ones cleaning it, no one's watching us. And that's a very common thing that I hear from a lot of women. Most of their partners or people are like, I didn't know, or I had speculations. But back to the emotion thing, I just thought, you know, you were just being emotional or irrational.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just lost my train of thought. You're right. Women are home. But what about women that are in the workplace? When we come back, I'd like to talk about that in the workplace, because it's harder to hide when you're
much
around
harder.
A lot of people. You're listening to Clean and Sober Radio. Our number is 1-888-728-9941. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2320.
Hey, this is Jackie Marling, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio. This is still Jackie Marling, and you should listen to Clean and Sober Radio. Everybody should listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, if you need help right now, call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. You know, I just thought about something. And actually, I'll tell you, one of our viewers, Ted Klotz, reminded me of this. when people go to rehab and they come out, they're looking for relationships because they haven't had one for 30 days, 60 days,
right.
200 days. And so that also plays into what goes on in a meeting when people are trolling for relationships. I'm not saying it's bad unless they do something inappropriate, but that's in men and women's minds. Is that correct?
Yes. And that's why there's a suggestion that you don't get in a relationship for the first year, but it is just a suggestion. Most people don't do it.
Right. That's not up for negotiation, is it?
No. They said, don't make any big decisions and don't get in a relationship. So I bought a house and I got a boyfriend
there
right away.
There you go. Perfect.
Right?
Yeah. Well,
and
worked
it worked out okay.
That's right.
It worked out great.
It certainly did. I'm going to say the number again, 1-888-728-9941. And if you've just joined us, we are talking about women in addiction and recovery. So let's talk about women in the workplace. It's more difficult to hide, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be, especially with – so most of my drinking took place in the workplace. I've never had kids. I'm engaged now, but I was not engaged when I got sober or heavily drinking. So most and all of my drinking was in the workplace, and it was very difficult to hide. There would be times where I would go to my car in between shifts. And instead of, you know, with alcohol, I know that they could smell it on my breath. I would drink NyQuil or, you know, bottles of NyQuil, try to hide it and try to do it and still come into my shift and not be able to do my job. I would be, you know, hazy and everything and people would notice. And there'd be times coming to work, you know, after a blackout or trying to come to, missing shifts, doing all these different things. It's much harder to hide when you have a shift of people staring at your every move and people who are accounting for your behavior.
Sure. And I think I know what the profession is. We're not going to say it. But it was probably not a good idea.
No. Right.
Exactly. I just want to clarify that. It was a totally legitimate profession, but we don't have to say what it is. How about you, Linda?
I learned to drink on the railroad. We've talked about this before. Like, I was a drinker. I always would get out of control at parties. But I didn't become a professional drinker until I worked on the railroad.
What again did you do on the railroad?
Onboard services, bartending. You know, don't order for alcohol when you get on the train in Philly. Because by then, we've already emptied them and put water in the little vodka bottles. And
they
look resealed. Oh, yeah. I would go all the way to Kansas City. I'd clean out the whole thing of the little bottles.
I mean, you would drink it all, right?
Oh, yeah. We would drink it all. It would go in a coffee cup. They taught me how to drink out of a coffee cup. And the coffee cup would be under the counter. And one after another, we'd empty them. And then we had seals. The older gentleman told me how to do it. Yeah. And we'd go back to the hotel and fill them with tea for the dark drinks and water for the light ones. And we'd reseal them and put them all back in.
You know, we as addicts are so clever.
So clever.
So clever until we're not.
And I was lucky. I mean, we got wasted on the train. Only one guy, and I was there 5 years, and only one guy, we had to leave somewhere. And if you missed the train, you could get fired. So we were in Kansas City. And we left without the guy, and he took a plane and met us in St. Louis so he wouldn't get fired. But there were a lot of crazy stories then what people did on them, you know. But that's... It was bad. It was bad. They taught me how to do it the right way. But you know what? It's interesting in rehab about the male and women thing. In rehab, they keep you separated. No matter what. No matter what the activity. There are some small groups where, you know, there's a man in your group and there's five or six of you in the therapist's office. But when they have things like we have a movie at night, men over here, women over here. And I met a guy in rehab, a guy from downtown, a gay guy, and we were buddies, and we were going to watch the movie together. And he had a broken leg from whatever he tripped on while he was drunk before he got thrown in there. And we were going to watch the movie, and we got yelled at. And even older people, like there were a bunch of us, and there were a bunch of policemen also in that program for police and fire.
Yeah.
And we got along with them great, and the lady was always yelling at us.
Rachel, did you go to rehab?
I did not go to rehab.
Okay. You went, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something. When you made the decision to go to rehab and you told people you had to go to rehab, were they like, did anyone say, women don't need it?
Oh, no, they didn't say that. Because, you know, I had had that surgery and I was hooked on pills by then. So the first time I didn't have to. The first time I got right in the program, but this time I did have to go. And my family really got involved and made it happen.
Very important.
And I had to wait 3 days for a bed,
yeah.
But I got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they made it really clear you have to stay there. You can't come home till you're done. It was hard. And everybody was mad at me.
When you relapse, it must be twice as hard. I mean,
yeah.
All this stuff you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
What's this one going to think? This one. I lost all this time. You know, you actually don't actually lose all the time. I mean, the strict sense in the program, yes, you do. But you have years and years and years of sobriety.
Oh, sure.
You know.
But it's, you know, I went through a whole year of telling everybody, coming back and going to every meeting. And then I went to a meeting and picked up my one-year coin one day. And this guy, Bobby, who I guess hadn't seen me in years, jumped up and said, "How do you only have a year?" And yells it out in front of everybody.
Are you serious?
So, like, it was like, what? Like, I was done telling everybody. I was done talking about it. It was a year later. But, you know, people are funny.
What other issues do women have that men don't? I mean, there are plenty of issues that men and women do have together. But, you know, the external forces that are on women in everyday life are exacerbated if you're labeled a drug addict or even if you're in recovery. You know, people should celebrate somebody in recovery, but there's still that because of the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's in recovery. You know.
There is a stigma.
Definitely.
There's no question about it. They want to, people want to judge you. And I remember somebody, a friend of mine, relapsed a few years back, and people were talking about her behind her back, and it was terrible.
The overdose death rate among women between 30 and 64 years old has climbed 260% in the last decade.
Yeah.
260%. Women aged 55 to 64 were hardest hit, with drug overdose death rates increasing by nearly 500% during the 18-year period further back. The average age of the overdose death of a woman was 46 years old.
Wow. That's scary. And a lot of the numbers that are coming out now are with fentanyl, are that fentanyl's involved, and fentanyl is killing people way faster.
Way faster, right? Everything mm-hmm. has fentanyl.
Everything has fentanyl in it.
Our listeners and viewers, I'm sure the ones that are in recovery understand this, but the ones who aren't, you can't use anything and have a totally clear conscience that you're getting what you think you're using.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you would like a fentanyl test kit, please go down to Prevention Point. They have them. They're giving them out for free.
Where is that? That's in Philadelphia,
it's in
Pennsylvania?
Kensington.
Ted Klotz says to us, I think women hide it better than men.
Yeah.
Drive by a liquor store in the morning. They are there.
Yep.
go to the casinos during day, and there's more women. The reason I know is I was there. So what he's saying is, so women are get there early, so nobody sees them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah. Oh, you hear stories all the time of people they don't want to go to the same state store, and they go to different. I never did that because in New York you could get liquor on any corner. When I moved to here, I was like, what do you mean? It was Sunday. We had to go to a bar to buy a six-pack. So I found it strange when I moved here. But all people tell that story all the time. Oh, I have to make it to the state store to get my supply in. It's going to snow. It's going to this. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. But, yeah.
You know, I imagine, and the three of us are in the same situation. I'll explain what I mean, that we are all married or going to be married to people in recovery.
Yes.
And I guess especially – well, I'm not going to say especially for women. It makes it much easier – to be and stay in recovery when you have a partner that totally gets it.
Yep,
I agree.
You know,
totally.
A woman that has a husband who's not in recovery and maybe comes off he's the tough guy and puts a lot of pressure mm-hmm. on his spouse makes the situation unbearable.
Definitely. Well, I think it's also, you know, if you have a supportive partner, so if you're married to a husband who's very supportive of you and tries to understand what your fellowship is, what you know, your term of sobriety is to you and everything like that. If they're supportive in that way, it can be a lot easier. But it's the same way as if you're getting healthy in the home and you just have, you know, junk food everywhere and you just have this all the time and they're absolutely refusing to change the mark.
Yes.
It's near impossible.
That's a very good point. It's good. That's a very good point. Let me see what else.
I think that a lot of women go to Al-Anon because their husband's out of control, and a lot of times they figure out in there that they want to go to rehab then, that they find their problem when they go to Al-Anon because their husband has a problem.
Right.
And when you go to the Al-Anon meetings, that's what you hear in the Nar-Anon meetings, that, oh, yeah, well, I came in because of my daughter, and then I realized I gambled all our money away and, you know, whatever. So some, you know, people you meet, they say, oh, I didn't think I had a problem until my daughter was in rehab, and I went to that meeting at the rehab, and then I talked to her about it, and I really do have a problem, and then the guy goes to rehab.
Right. Rachel, did you get clean before your partner or after?
After.
Okay, after. So was that difficult for him?
Yeah, we've actually talked about it a couple times. I think especially because of that stigma of that we talked about earlier with when a newcomer comes in, you don't want to, you know, take advantage of a newcomer, come off like that, how you view yourself. And I think that already being in a relationship with someone who, you know, I've been able to hide it pretty well. He didn't necessarily see it right away because I didn't drink like him. I didn't use like him. I didn't whatever, fill in the blank. That doesn't minimize that I don't have a problem and that I don't need help. But there can be that aspect that makes it difficult. So for us, we had very, very separate programs when we came in. Like, he was very clear about, you know, what needed to be done. But if anything, it made my drinking harder being with him when, you know, when I still was drinking. I was very aware of his boundaries when I could not drink, what he was comfortable with. It made hiding, you know, my drunks and everything a lot more difficult and made me more aware of my own problem a lot faster than if I had a partner who wasn't sober.
You know, I'm wondering if is it easier for men to get out of a relationship if their partner's using? Like, I've had enough. But women, it's not as easy because they might be relying on the man for financial support and all that kind of stuff. So there's another trap for women.
Yeah.
To get out of it.
Yeah, a lot of my clients could not get out of their relationships. They couldn't financially.
Right.
They couldn't afford it with the kids. You know, and you know, it depends what the other person is like. Sometimes the other person will call Child Protective Services on you.
Yeah.
Like a lot of my clients were in trouble having home visits with social workers, and it was all because of these disputes with the spouses. So it's very difficult. They get in trouble for stuff, you know, that normal people could get away with. But it's difficult, and they can't get out of the relationships. Even if it's an abusive relationship, it's very, very hard to get the person out.
Linda, in your practice, and you've been around a long time, do you find that women don't make the decision to go into treatment as quickly as men do? I don't know if there are any facts.
I had mostly court-ordered clients. My clients were told they had to go to treatment or jail.
Yeah.
So they came to get their probation straightened out. And women, I had a woman that she and her sister were both pregnant at the same time, and they went into a rehab to have the babies clean. But they were both very difficult to, like, open up about what was going on about them, and I think they wanted to go back to using once the baby came out, and they didn't know how to say it. But they did do the right thing for the baby. They got clean, and they went to a place where they could have the baby.
Yeah. It's so much more complicated for women.
It is complicated.
You know, if you're just joining us now, we're talking with Linda and Rachel about women in addiction and recovery. And, you know, men don't think of these kind of things. A lot of men don't think about how difficult it is for women to admit they're addicts and to go get treatment.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you know.
The stigma's really bad.
Yeah. 1-888-728-9941. Give us a call unless you're chicken. Because we have a lot of good information. You know, a lot of people don't call in, but they're watching and listening. Mm-hmm. I get stuff all during the week of people saying, you know, it was a great show, and but you know, people are afraid, you know, people don't like to call in.
They don't. I don't know why.
Yeah, where's Mark Willig?
We're friendly.
You know, Stephen Sussman. Hello,
hi, Steve.
From Israel.
Oh, you're in Israel?
Yeah, he's in Israel.
Oh,
he's been there for at least a week. I know that. Jackie Mullica, oh my God, I just got engaged in recovery this weekend. Congratulations.
That's
Jackie.
Great. It's fantastic.
There you go.
That's great. Yeah.
In recovery. Mark Smith, Warren Crispell, Rachel Bryant, Shelley Porter Williams. Hi, guys. Glad to catch you today. What other issues do women have? I mean, once you get into recovery, do you still have – there's still the issues – I think we might have, I might have touched on before. I can't remember. Of if you mention it to somebody who doesn't understand it, when they hear recovery, they don't think you broke your leg. They think there's something
– Right.
Not right, right? Right.
Yeah, exactly. I don't tell too many people. Right. You know, if it comes up, I'll say I am, but I won't, like, mention it right off the bat. A lot of people don't
for that. Well, you have to be careful.
Most people don't understand.
People will use it against you. I think it's less and less now. I think that because the education and the press and you know, all this, it's pretty much out there. I think there's still major stigma, but I don't think it's like it was even 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah. When I first came in, there were hardly any women at the meetings.
Right.
You know, it's almost 40 years, and it's going to be I would have had 37 this year. So
right.
37 years ago, there were just one or two women at a meeting.
Right.
Mostly guys.
And I remember in rehab, I was at the Institute of the Pennsylvania Hospital. If there were 30 people, I'd say 27 were men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That's really wild to think of coming from my perspective, coming in sober.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, like it was very blended. Like I felt like I had a very, a plethora of a support system of women when I came in. Like there's women's meetings, there's women reaching out to me. There's like all these different things. I didn't feel as, it's interesting hearing your perspective. Like there wasn't that big of a disparity. Also in the area that we live in too, I think that it also depends on the area you're from.
Mm-hmm.
I visited Wisconsin back home and gone to meetings out there. And there are out there a vast number, at least in the meetings that I went to, of men than women there. I'm not sure if it's, you know, a cultural difference or if, you know, it's whatever is going on in the surrounding area. But I think out here we have a great network as well.
Yeah, because urban areas, I think it's a wider selection of all different types of people.
But it's another thing. The women can't get away from the house. They can't get away from the children.
Mm-hmm.
So when you tell somebody do 90 and 90, 90 meetings in 90 days, they can't do it.
Right. Yeah.
They have to find daycare, night care, whatever, and depends when their husband works or when their mom works, and it's just too much.
Well, then there could be the frustrations if the other duty is, like, if you're not cleaning the house, if you're coming home and
right.
you can't go grocery shopping, and if someone's depending on you, well, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you following up on this? There's so much of an emotional aspect when you're getting sober to begin with. It's so draining, and we don't have that same space to just come home and just turn off for a little
right.
bit. We have to come home and turn right back on.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Do you think there's a change in attitude? You know, before it was women, you know, women who were addicts, they usually drank is what their deal was. But now with the drugs, is it worse? Is it worse for women?
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of okay to think, oh, she just drinks wine every day. But when she starts using pills and fentanyl and heroin, that's
well,
like,
the pills
whoa.
Are a lot easier to hide.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So a lot of women do pills, and they can get legal prescriptions for them. And then people think that it's okay because the doctor prescribed it, and it's still not okay for an addict.
Right. Rachel, what was your drug of choice?
So I always liked Percocets and Oxys. I liked things that liked to calm me down.
Very nice.
They're very easy to hide, very easy to obtain.
What a great choice.
Yes.
Linda.
Oh, I was mostly
everything.
Drinking.
Oh,
drinking
was
and
drinking?
Coke. Was most oh Coke.
Yeah.
But you see, when we were young, and this a lot of women have this thing. If you got a little heavy, your mother would take you to the diet doctor.
Absolutely.
And I got speed when I was 13
yeah.
at the doctor's.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the message you get when you're 13, that you have to take drugs to lose weight. And they would take you every week. And the guy made it in his house, and it was a dropper. Oh, my God. I would put more than two drops in a hot tea, and I'd be off and running.
Yeah. Isn't that horrible?
It is. So I started out on that, and then, you know, drinking and everything else came with it. I was not a big one for downers at all.
Oh, I was.
Well, I did Quaaludes, but that's different.
Well.
That's different.
Yeah, okay.
That's different.
I agree with you. You never tried
Quaaludes.
No.
No,
they were
I weren't around.
Get them. You weren't around.
No, it was different. It was different. You could drink and have a couple of those. It was different. You wouldn't even go to sleep. See, with the other stuff, you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're totally right. We're going to take another break.
Okay.
When we come back, we're having a great conversation with Rachel and Linda. Give us a call, 1-888-728-9941. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
The Higher Calling Foundation was started by employment attorney in recovery, Kevin Heyer, to encourage businesses to hire employees in recovery and help those in recovery find jobs, get career counseling, and more. All things insurance doesn't cover, and all for free. Because everyone deserves a second chance. Visit HireCalling.org. That's H-Y-E-R calling.org to find out what we can do for you. HireCalling.org. That's H-Y-E-R calling.org.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Well, I want to correct the announcer. The new phone number, because we have new equipment, is 1-888-728-9941. Hey, Linda, you brought up a good point during the break. Relationships in recovery. Tell us how women deal with what are their expectations, what are the problems. You know, some of them are the same with men, but there must be stuff that's indicative to women. And
well, Rachel touched on it. I mean, you're so vulnerable when you're first getting sober. You're not yourself. You feel like you're not yourself yet. You're not the old you. You're not. You haven't discovered the real you yet. And you meet a guy, and he's cute, and he wants to keep you company, and you're both going to meetings together, and it seems like a great idea until you have to break up with them because they relapse or because you meet somebody else or whatever.
Well, how's that different with a guy then? The same situation.
Yeah, but if a girl goes with two people in the meeting, she gets a reputation right away.
Yeah.
It's not so simple. I was dating a guy when I had 9 months, and then when I was 2 years in, I met my husband. And so I broke up with the guy. I had been away. I had been in Italy for 2 weeks. And when I came back, I told him, you know, we're done. And he came and, like, shouted outside my window. And they had that scene in Sex and the City, the same thing. Like, they try to substitute the girl for the liquor, and then they get all attached. And it's difficult.
Well, there is a correlation between addiction with drugs and sex.
Exactly. Any addiction. Gaming, you know, the gamers, the impulse control, the hoarders, the gamblers. There's a lot going on out there with addiction brains.
Mm-hmm. Is anybody, besides Brad, is anybody normal here?
No. No. So I stay away from the gambling, too. I stopped smoking 5 years ago. Yeah. I mean, a lot of – you end up wanting to clean everything up. If you really work the program, you want to just clean up your whole life. And it's such a relief to not have to worry about, oh, I have to hide this. I'm going here. I'm going there. I'm spending money. And you don't have to hide anymore.
Do you think women need a relationship in recovery more than men do?
No.
You're right. No. Men do, right?
Men want that relationship or something. They want something.
That's very interesting to me because I also think, you know, I'm a very independent person just by nature, but I have so many friends coming in, newcomers or people who have been here for a long time. And it's just interesting. Like, we come in wanting to work on ourselves. We come in, or at least the people that I've met, we come in wanting to work on ourselves, being a little bit more, dare I say, naturally introspective. I feel like we tend to look more and see more of what our own problems are. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, I see what I want to do. I want to make this plan. I want to do all this change. And, you know, here comes another person, you know, a guy, a relationship, whatever, that gets in the way, that blocks us from that necessary step we need to take in our sobriety. Those necessary steps, those painful steps, because this relationship is new and shiny and it feels good and it's a distraction and whatever. We don't actually get to work on the problem and complete the journey that we need to take. But when we focus on it, when we follow the thing, we don't get a boyfriend, we don't do all these things in the first year of sobriety. Mm-hmm. Of course, I've seen so much change. I've seen change in myself. I've seen change in people. Like, there's just so much change that happens and it's contagious. You want to continue that change. But again, the more things you put in that block before you make enough of that change for it to be a foundational building block, it really gets in the way and it can be really distracting.
So do you think men, their focus, especially newly in recovery, is different than women? I'm not saying all. But men still want to have fun.
Of course.
Right?
But they're also not as introspective naturally. Like she was saying, they're not thinking about what am I doing next? What am I going to do? How do I improve myself? They're not thinking that. I don't know what they're thinking. But, you know, they're
I know what they're thinking. But no, you're right.
But it's hard. They're not there to work on themselves. And they say, oh, let's go to dinner. Let's skip that meeting. Let's go here. Let's go to a movie. I'm going to skip the meeting tonight. Oh, you're okay. You're with me. Yeah. And that they say stuff like that. And you think, well, it's okay. They've been around 10 years or whatever. Maybe I will go for dinner with them and I'll skip my women's meeting. And that just delays the getting better.
But that's really a big difference between men and women having nothing to do with addiction or recovery. Women are more introspective than men.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah, you know.
I get it.
I think that also goes with our ability to hide things a little bit more. We're thinking about our problems. We're thinking about your problems. We're thinking about the whole picture. We have to think about the whole picture because we're so aware of how people are going to judge us. Just like Linda said, if you sleep with too many men or women or whoever, when you come into the program, you're labeled a certain name. A guy's not labeled a certain name.
At all.
If you come into a meeting dressed a certain way, you're labeled a certain thing. We have to think about all of these things. Even before we get sober, even in our addiction, we have to be so aware of everything and everyone and everyone's thoughts.
That is, you know, whew, I'm like drained hearing this. But that's not all men. Okay?
No, of course
it's
not all men. Course.
You know, it's most of them, but not all of them.
No, it's not all of them at all. But I mean, it's, you know, it's another way of delaying the work you have to do. So if you veer off and go into a relationship, you're not taking anything seriously.
And it's a big risk because once you veer off, you might not come back because of certain things that happen.
Yeah.
You know, if the guy goes out, now what? Now what do you do?
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of girls, they want somebody and they're going to follow that guy and go right back out again. I always ask people, why are you here when I have a group?
Right.
And a lot of women will say that it's from a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And they will say they're there because the boyfriend broke up with them or because of whatever. But there's a terrible stigma, and they really have a hard time.
And I don't think you'll hear men say that because of a relationship.
No, they never say that.
They never.
They might say their mom told them to do it if they're younger. But mostly they got in trouble. My clients were mostly people who had legal issues, so it was different. But, you know. It's hard. You can't have a relationship in the beginning. It doesn't work out too good.
Right. It doesn't. I just want to mention a couple more people or they're going to kill me during the week. Dan Schmalian, good afternoon. Thanks, Gary. Eric Schwartz, I'll see you tomorrow, Eric. Pat Saltzman, Mark Willig, of course. Let me see who else. Who said they just got engaged?
Jackie
Mullica. Mm-hmm. That's still pretty cool.
That is so cool.
That's great stuff.
Well, that also touches on, like, you know, when I got sober, I had all these milestones to think of. What am I going to do when I get engaged? What am I going to do when I get married? What am I going to do when insert XYZ happens? And then you get sober and these things start to happen and you can still celebrate. You still have fun. You're still living your life. It's the substance becomes less of the focus and you start to live your life.
Right. Yeah. Because these are good distractions now that come into your life. And also, I also think, you know, it's one day at a time, of course. But the more time you have, the stronger you get, and the distractions mean less, hopefully. That's what I have found.
And you don't have to think about things. When you get a newcomer, you have to tell them if you're going to a wedding, talk to somebody before and after. Make sure you leave before things get crazy. And if you're not sure of yourself and you go to something with your family and you have to leave, it looks bad. It looks bad, but you know, and you don't want to tell people I'm leaving because you're all about to get drunk. But you are going to leave. You're not going to stick around.
So when you get married, your wedding, will you have alcohol?
No.
We're not having it.
We're not having
it. See, I've been married twice, okay?
Shocking.
Twice?
Yeah, just twice.
I was just twice. My second marriage to Marjorie, there was no alcohol. Obviously, we don't have alcohol in the house, nothing. But there were people who were like, there's no alcohol here.
Right.
Okay, so that's another thing you have to it's a joyous occasion. It's a great occasion in recovery. And now you got to think about this crap, too.
Well, the way that we look at it, if the people that we're inviting, especially to our wedding, can't enjoy an evening or an hour.
Definitely.
Or a couple hours without a substance, a drink, alcohol, whatever, like that, I feel like that needs to be examined a little bit more than why we don't have alcohol at the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just another, That's a good choice. But you know that that's a good problem to have. You're having a celebration and you just made a decision. We're not having alcohol there.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
So
that makes it easy.
Listen, guys, I really appreciate you coming in. I do want to continue this conversation with both of you because I think it's very important to talk about women in addiction recovery. It's important to talk about men, but it's more important. There are many more issues with women. So thanks, everybody. I thought it was a great show. Wes, thank you very much. Brad, thanks a million. Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
Linda.
Hi, Linda. Thank you for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
Everybody wants to shine.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
The dust of